years.
You know,
I'm
my favorite
working.
Story that you told, it still is, out of everything that we've ever heard on this show. You know what I'm going to say?
Which one's that?
When Rob was the one, I believe, maybe I got it wrong, you were the one who told me the Steven Seagal story.
Yeah, you got a new one?
Oh, that he wrote the greatest screenplay.
Wait, for anyone who's never heard that, tell the first story.
Okay, there's a writer that I know, and I won't mention his name, but he was meeting Steven Seagal for the rewrite, for the writing, potentially, for Under Siege 2. And that was the one that broke him when it made $57 million, when that was $57 million in the early 90s. And so he goes into one of those trailers, you know, to meet with Steven Seagal, and he's on the set, and it's one of those big triple bangers where you go into this trailer and it's like you can get lost in there. It's a maze of pop-outs, you know. It's like, which pop-out is Steven Seagal? And he's in the third bedroom to the left and the end of the
big star.
And he's waiting in there for 45 minutes. He's making him wait, sitting there by himself. Finally, Steven Seagal emerges from one of the other anterooms in the mobile home. And he comes out and he said, "I just read the greatest script I've ever read in my life." He goes, "Really? Who wrote it?" "I did."
And I get real high and I scream on top of my lungs, "What's going on?"
Matt, let's cut to the chase here.
Yeah.
We're recording this Baby Oil and Blow. This is morning drive Baby Oil and Blow, as far as I'm concerned. This is 1 in the afternoon. It might as well be 8 in the morning.
Morning drive Baby Oil and Blow.
It's not our normal time, so that's why I'm going to need you to give us the traffic and weather.
Traffic's all intense and twos.
That's right.
Well, Main Street was clear coming in through Crown Point today.
The chopper.
No traffic. Well, a little bit over there on South Street coming over towards Nate Adams and Birdland. But other than that, you're going to smooth. Tollways are starting to pack a little bit. Eden's is fine. Watch out on the interchange. All right, back to you to the studio.
That's just the way it is.
Oh, and the weather,
some
yeah.
Things will never change.
We didn't do the weather. The weather...
I was just going some light rock there.
We survived the 100-degree temperatures.
That's right. It's a little gloomy right now,
It's a bit overcast. It's a bit cool out there, and it's trying to sprinkle.
Some fearsome weather blew in, which I'll tell you right now, I'm all for.
Yeah.
I have literal, like, sunburn type, marks on my face from standing next to an oven for the last 2 days.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it looks like I was out in the sun too long.
No, man. You just,
It's ridiculous, this heat.
Yeah, you were by an oven. It was hot.
I got some bad news.
What had happened?
There's been a whole, like, to-do going on at my pizzeria this week.
Oh, God.
There's a snapping turtle who keeps visiting and trying to chomp his way into the back door.
That's pretty cool.
In order to ride the coattails of this whole Gator and Humboldt Park fiasco that's been going on in Chicago, I named him Parappa the Snapper. But last night, during the dinner rush, I got some distressing news. Some customers came in and said that there was a big snapping turtle out in the parking lot. And we're just like, "Oh, that's just Parappa the Snapper. He shows up and he tries to bite his way through our back door. It's a funny game we play." But then they were like, "Well, then somebody else picked him up and put him in the back of their pickup truck and drove away." And we were horrified. As much as he wants to bite our fingers off and kill us, he's really just become a beloved member of the family. I think that hillbilly's dining on turtle soup tonight,
I was going to say,
man.
You think...
I think that's... What else could be going on?
You think some hillbilly
shredded
that turtle?
A big snapping turtle. Especially one as grumpy and curmudgeonly as Parappa the Snapper.
Tonight I dine on turtle soup.
Maria, we saw a snapping turtle in the middle of the road by the old fairgrounds there.
Mm-hmm.
And Maria was like,
well, snapping turtle season, yeah. I guess.
Well, this was like a year ago.
No, no, let's pretend like it was now.
Okay, it was just,
you know,
the other day.
Yeah, it makes the story better.
And she was like, well, we got to pull over and help it. I was like, fuck that. That thing's a snapping
turtle. That thing's literally like 20 years older than the both of us. Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
She was like, no, we got to get it out of the road. I was like, I'm not fucking going near that thing. So she goes out there with like a sheet.
Good way to lose a digit.
Yeah, I thought to myself, I was like, if she loses a finger, I'll leave her. I'm not like, staying
not
with her.
Just in life, but right now, I will pull away in this car and leave her on the side of the road. Just,
I'm not dealing with that.
No,
you're right by the hospital there.
Dipshit with a 9-fingered woman? That's not what I'm going to be the rest of my life.
No way. No way. I'm just be a dipshit with a 10-fingered beauty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need all those fingers. So when I say...
I got plans for every one of those fingers.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that
when
right
I ask
now.
You, how hot am I on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
You flash all.
I don't want you
perfect
to
10,
take,
baby.
Take your shoes off when I ask you that question.
Need it? No. It is Baby Oil and Blow. It's a morning extravaganza because, like we already stated,
we're literally drinking coffee instead of whiskey. This is crazy.
There's booze in there. I mean, we put that.
Just a taste.
A rum? Was it a rum?
No,
or banana liqueur?
It's a banana brandy we got
a brandy.
Here.
There we go.
So just, you know, give it a little tropical taste, a little pick-me-up.
We don't need much because we literally just stopped drinking a few hours ago, you know.
You don't got to show them how all the sausage is made.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
Jeez.
That's fair. The good news is, you know, if we're a little hungover and and it's early morning,
I feel good.
That's okay because
real strong.
It's a whispering episode anyways.
For when occasionally you might have to say something in a Spanish flourish, and then suddenly we get very articulate.
That's right.
Nicaragua!
It's a very, very whispery episode.
That's right. We're talking Steven Seagal. This episode, because we're in our third week of our July Mount Rushmore of 90s action icons. We gave you a Stallone. We gave you a Schwarzenegger. What's next? You got to go into Steven Seagal.
Seagal.
Give me a break. Give me a break here.
Oh, yeah. We're your hosts, Matt and Nate.
Didn't do that part yet?
No. Well, I'm Matt. You can be... Who do you want to be?
I feel like usually I'm the Joey to your Jesse because we got some Rush Hour Renegade stuff going, but this is much more of a Wake Up San Francisco vibe we're doing this week here.
Yeah,
I want to be Aunt Becky to your Danny.
That's true. You would pay $500,000 to get your kids into college.
I don't have a kid, but once I do, that kid's getting only the best that money can buy.
You are the Nate Adams.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. It's nice to be here in this finally not sweltering July. They gave us a little break because they know how hard we've been working, tearing through all these, you know, action icons. So.
Everybody's working for the weekend.
Turn that heat down a little bit. You know we had to get up early. You're going to Philadelphia or something. Where are you going?
Streets of Philadelphia. McConnellsburg, Pennsylvania, I think it's called.
Okay, so that's... You don't have to get AIDS for this trip, right, probably.
No. I think I could get Hills Have Eyes, though.
Yeah, I've never heard of that town. From what I understand, the parts of that state that aren't the city parts, pretty scary.
It's pretty much like in between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia where there's nothing to do and there's nowhere to go.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to fly into the Wire, Baltimore.
Okay.
And then
You going to check out Hamsterdam before you get on that highway?
What's a Hamsterdam?
Well, that's the block.
Baltimore
PD created a no laws zone so everybody could sell their drugs away from all the white people.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go through there for
like
my
some
little...
Some people didn't get all the way to fourth season of The Wire.
I didn't.
That's maybe fifth. Fourth was the schools. Maybe that's third. That's third.
Either way, it's
time
just
for a Wire rewatch, everybody.
A little hour and a half jaunt to where I'm staying in Nowheresville.
That doesn't sound pleasant, but, you know, whatever. We've got things we got to do here, so we're going to rearrange the schedule. We're still going to get you this podcast out because we're goddamn professionals.
Yep, we went early because you're going to do a little double feature tonight.
That's right.
What are you watching?
Well, this rundown today will be brought to us by the book Teen Movie Hell. which is all about the teenage movies of the 1980s.
There's a book called Teen Movie Hell.
Some bearded nerd that I've met a couple times wrote it. He seems like a pretty good guy for a bearded nerd. And he's hosting a double feature tonight, 35mm showings of Valley Girl, which is one of the few Nick Cage movies I've never seen.
Yeah, I can't say I've seen that.
And The Last American Virgin, which is one of my favorite 80s sex comedies of all time. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah, I'm
going to knock this podcast out. I'm going to get on the highway. I'm going to make this shit happen.
Let it roll down the highway.
Right, that is a great song.
You should probably listen to that. Which bearded nerd wrote this book?
I don't know. He's just literally a bearded nerd who wrote a book about teen sex comedies. I don't have a name written down.
Did you read the book?
I did not read the book, but he's been around in the Chicago scene a little bit doing nerdy stuff. I saw him host a screening of Hot Dog the Movie not too long ago. You know.
Hot Dog!
Was that animated one?
No, that's an 80s ski movie. People getting naked and ski competitions happening. Mm-hmm. Very seminal as far as that, people getting naked and then a competition happens with the ragtag group of people against the rich white guys.
Is anybody in that one?
Film. Yeah, of course. The guy from American Werewolf in London.
I don't know.
And one of those Skinamax straight-to-video 90s girls.
Anna Kendrick.
Early, not pulling the name up. It's too early for me to be pulling names out of my
Tawny
name
Katan.
Bank right now.
Shannon Tweed.
Hard to Kill is what we're talking about this week. This movie is from 1990. It's a 1990 release.
Mm-hmm.
95-minute runtime here. Much more digestible than last week.
Yes.
Budget of $10 million, maybe. There's not hard numbers out there. This is an estimate I got.
Yeah.
Gross, $47 million domestic. So another big Steven
Smashing
Seagal success,
success
going
yeah.
on here. This is Steven Seagal maybe reaching his nadir.
Steven
I'm not
Seagal.
Quite sure what nadir means. I guess maybe Under Siege would be his nadir.
Printed his own money back in the 90s.
Boss Rootin's go crazy on Twitter. He's angry at Steven Seagal.
I heard an unverified story about when Gene LaBelle and Steven Seagal had a...
Yeah, that's a true story. Yeah. That's an absolute true story. Gene LaBelle told me that story. Yeah. Gene tells you it like this. He doesn't actually tell you the whole story.
What's the story?
Well, you know, Steven was trying to say that no one could choke him out. You can't choke him out. He had this move. This move will stop you from choking out. So, you know, I said, all right, Steven, let's try it. I get him in a headlock there. I get him in the rear naked. And he takes this hand, the free hand, and you just karate chops me right in, you know, the old sisters.
And this is like, you know, the way Gene LaBelle talks. Right. He wouldn't even say his balls. He's like the nicest guy ever. He would say something like, right in the old Johnson. You know? And then,
then I guess he got tired after doing that, and he just fell asleep. And I guess maybe he forgot to go to the bathroom. So he went to the bathroom then.
Bruce Malmuth is our director here. As far as for our concerns, our action movie concerns, he's the guy that directed a young Stallone in Nighthawks.
So Nighthawks.
Stay tuned to a future July Mount Rushmore. We might be talking about some more Bruce Malmuth here in the future.
Hopefully.
Our stars, number one, is Steven Seagal. He's a fucking Aikido expert.
Aikido.
He owns more ponytail holders than anyone in history. He's playing the character Mason Storm.
Mason Storm. I'm just a cop.
One of the coolest fucking character names outside of a Nick Cage movie you're ever going to hear in this thing. He is a cop.
He's just a vest-wearing cop.
Yeah, that's about it.
Not like a bulletproof vest, just a vest.
We'll get into his police work a little bit later. Kelly LeBrock is playing a sexy nurse who nurses him back to health after he is RoboCop murdered into a 7-year coma.
Comes out of acting retirement to
do this film. I was going to say, just a few years before this, she was playing the perfect woman in Weird Science.
Yeah.
Literally everybody's idea of the perfect woman. And
God, she's hot.
Now in 1990, she's just gooing all over Steven Seagal. That's quite the fucking drop off. I don't know what's going on in her life, but couldn't have been good, Matt.
She was married to Seagal.
To Steven Seagal. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What fucking happened to her life?
Cocaine, probably.
Terrible things. Gotta be terrible things.
I would say there's a newer one, and I think it's even superior. It's this has happened. I just heard that because I collect those stories like jewels. Anytime there's a Steven Seagal story. Like, I love the Jamie Presley one. Where it's, I'm an expert in shiatsu massage. Please let me massage you. You know, you told me that one. And see, next thing you know, she's having her boobs grabbed on by him.
I'm an expert in shiatsu.
I'm an expert. Let me give me those titties, baby. So anyway, he's doing a movie. He's doing a movie with Keenan Ivory Wayans.
Right.
And I did one, and that's where I heard Keenan tell me this story. I hope he doesn't mind me telling this story. But Steven Seagal had just met with the Dalai Lama. And apparently, if you give enough money to the Dalai Lama's charities, eventually you get something out of it. Right. And so the Dalai Lama made him a deity.
Wow.
A god. Some Tibetan Buddhist.
Must have really appealed to his ego.
Oh, yeah, no, it must have. No, so anyway, he comes to the set after he makes you the Dalai Lama. He comes, now he's a god. He comes to the set. Now he was Steven Seagal. Now he's Steven Seagal. Now he's Steven Seagal, the god, the deity from the Dalai Lama. Wow. And he comes to the set, and he's there, and Keenan says, so what? I just met with the Dalai Lama, and he, in his wisdom, decided to make me a deity. And he gives him the quang, karang, the dong, the ding, the dong, the dong, whatever. And that's, and I feel a difference. I feel like an enlightenment, the sense of that I can do something now. And everything just seems to come into place for me spiritually and in my career. And I feel like it's certain things now that never made sense to me make sense to me on a universal level. And his assistant comes up to him and says, hey, Steven, your ex-wife called. You can't bring the kids over this weekend. You tell that fucking cunt. If she doesn't get those kids over here, I'll break her fucking neck.
Frederick Coffin is playing the one other good cop in this movie. Old, grizzled, square-headed cop that Steven Seagal can trust.
O'Malley.
This guy, he's a character actor you've seen in a million things. Yeah. Doing great character actor work here. V.I. Warshawski he was in. I know you love that one, Matt. I know you're a big V.I. Warshawski fan.
Duh.
Kathleen Turner, your favorite actress?
Yeah.
Also,
hello, I'm Kathleen Turner.
Officer Koharski in Wayne's World. That's one of the best scenes from fucking Wayne's World. Who's going to forget that shit? William Sadler's playing our big bad guy, a corrupt senator. Another just character actor that you've seen in a million fucking things. Mm-hmm. Usually playing a fucking dickhead.
Yeah.
Die Hard 2, you know this guy from Haywood and Shawshank. Fucking, I know you people.
You know, I never saw that movie.
Every 90s afternoon when you accidentally left your TV on TBS, I know Shawshank eventually started playing. This jerkhole sitting across me is the only person I've ever met that hasn't seen Shawshank 100 fucking times.
Yeah.
Also, my favorite William Sadler role of all time. He played the Reaper in Bogus Journey.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great turn as the Reaper in Bogus Journey.
He is reprising his role in Bill and Ted 3.
I love hearing that because he's fucking comedic gold. One of my favorite little Easter egg jokes is the end credits of Bogus Journey when they're going through all the future headlines of the things Bill and Ted accomplish now that they've corrected the timeline and become big successes. There's one headline that's Reaper wins the Indy 500. And then under that, a direct quote from the Reaper. I didn't know I could run that fast.
Wow.
That's a solid joke
right
there. Tagline of Hard to Kill. He's L.A. Detective Mason Storm. Three hired assassins left him for dead, and he's waited 7 years to even the score.
Why did he wait so long, do you think?
He was in a coma. We'll get into it.
Oh, okay.
Plot of this movie I pulled up here. Everybody loves bringing up the character name because it's so good. Mason Storm, a do-it-alone cop. They've got do-it-alone in
Mason
quotes.
Storm.
Like that's a saying people say. A do-it-alone cop is gunned down at home. The intruders kill his wife and think they've killed both Mason and his son, too.
I wish they had.
Mason is secretly taken to a hospital where he spends several years in a coma. His son, meanwhile, is growing up thinking his father is dead. When Mason wakes up, everyone is in danger. Himself, his son, his best friend, his nurse, but most of all, those who arranged for his death.
Ooh.
Little like a
Mason Storm
Watchmen style, you're locked up in here with me
to kill.
Type twist to that plot synopsis.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it. What else I'm going to enjoy is this in-depth discussion of Hard to Kill we're going to have in our next segment.
It's going
to
be so depth.
Bullet points.
It's going to be so depth.
Yeah.
Bullet points.
Tear into our notes, man.
Mason Storm.
Let's look down everything we've got bullet points
hard
to talk about.
Hard to Kill.
What struck you about Mason Storm and his incredible journey here in Hard to Kill?
The first thing that jumped out at me is the Oscars were going on. The film opens up April 11th, 1983.
The 1983 Oscars are going on as we as our rising action is simultaneously occurring.
You know that because the first line of the film is Seagal mm-hmm. being like, oh, come on, I want to go home and watch the Oscars.
I'm so into the Oscars right now, but I got to do the police work out on this dock.
And then
in the shipping yard.
The Oscars are referenced in every other line for the next 15 minutes of the movie.
Until he's shotgunned into a coma.
Yeah.
It's super weird.
Yeah.
We even get some like background TV audio and one of our other cops is watching the Oscars.
Right.
Because in 1983, everybody's watching the Oscars. I think we get the big Gandhi win, I think is what's going on.
Oh, is that
best
what it was?
Best actor for Gandhi going on.
Okay. All right. We get some
Sir Ben. It's his
great...
big night.
We get
it's weird. It doesn't go back to Hollywood or acting or movies or anything at any other point in the movie, but they just keep dropping the Oscars in like it's going to lead to something eventually, and it never fucking does.
No. Some crotchety liquor store owner is like shit-talking the Oscars, which is a little, you know, a little peek behind the curtain because those guys are like, hey, we're writing this movie. Mm-hmm. We will never win Oscars.
See, there's a lot of things that you see in like movies like this where you bring up like in a meta way, and usually the script starts going into a rant against critics, which is what I thought this was going. It's going to be like this person who writes bad B-movies being like, critics don't know what they're talking about. But this liquor store owner full on just starts shit-talking movies.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't need to go to a movie. Cost $4. I got real life going on around me. And I was like, oh, God, thought you were going to do that passive-aggressive shit-talking critics thing, but you're just shit-talking the industry that feeds you. Ballsy, these people.
Did movies even cost $4 in 1983?
I mean, I guess so, because first I thought he was shit-talking the Oscars, and I was like, why would the Oscars cost $4? I was like, no, I think he's saying movies cost $4.
Yeah,
and I was like,
oh,
boy, $4 for a movie ticket? That sounds like a dream.
Yeah. And then to drive home that the Oscars were on, we get a lot of Johnny Carson talking about how long the Oscars
were. You guys
see
these Oscars here. Yeah, we had some Oscars happening this evening.
It was a weird, wild show. It was very long.
It seems like after he gets shotgunned into a coma, at least for like a little bookend, it'd be like 7 years later,
Jay Leno.
The morning of the 1990s Oscars. Like, when in 1990, like, Dances with Wolves or something, probably. I don't know. We should have got a bookend, but the Oscars are never brought up again.
He wakes up and Jay Leno's doing the Tonight Show, and he's like, "What?
Somebody put me back in the fridge.
Why's the Doritos guy doing the Tonight Show?
That'd be a nightmare. You get fucking blasted into a 7-year coma, and then suddenly Johnny is retired.
Yeah.
Fucking Jay Leno's me.
Yeah, so
we're gentlemen, work on cars, right?
What's going on, everybody? Have a good time.
Why did old people like Jay Leno so much? They really gave that guy a career he didn't deserve.
Yeah, Maroney left and then came back.
The thing about Jay Leno is like every funny comedian you've ever known that like you respect is always just like Jay Leno, the funniest comedian who's ever lived, just the best among us. So good. Say what you will about what he does on The Tonight Show, but like he's literally the funniest stand-up I've ever seen. And I'm always like, he's not, though.
Yeah.
You guys are wrong.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Am I just hallucinating over here? He's not funny.
It's like to make it as a comedian.
I grew up watching a lot of those stand-up fucking montage things they just fill the air with on early Comedy Central. I've seen plenty of Jay Leno stand-up.
Yeah.
It sucks dick, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. So Mason Storm's a cop.
Mm-hmm.
He's spying on some people. We don't really know
why.
Right
here, my first bullet point as this movie starts, really good first impressions, and then immediately terrible second impressions. Because our first shot, it's a nighttime shot in an alley. The streets are wet, so we get some street light reflecting off that. There's
street lights, people
coming out of like a vent in the ground there.
Uh-huh.
It's just very moody. It's very film noir. And I'm like, all right, we're in line for a gritty cop movie right here.
Hell yeah.
Something. But then immediately, Seagal gets out of his car, starts sneaking to wherever this thing he's staking out is, and just starts just talking to himself out loud.
Yeah.
So we know everything that's happening. He's like, oh, I got my video camera here. I'm about to go
video camera these criminals and figure out what's going on.
I'm
going
to do some audio.
I know this guy. This guy's name's fucking Vincenzo Bertolini.
Capitoli.
It's like, oh, no.
He's a very established bad guy.
This script doesn't trust us to figure out anything for ourselves. This is going to be a terribly written movie, Matt. Yeah. We're in for a real sour treat here for the next 90 minutes.
He's a very, very well-known criminal.
So
everybody knows he's a criminal.
The gist of this scene is this well-known criminal is meeting with somebody who's in the shadows. Yeah. He doesn't know who he is, but Seagal lets us know, like,
I think I know who this guy is. I recognize his voice.
If only he would step out of the shadows, then I could see who he is.
Then
he's
kind of
doing some Keanu there.
Then I would know who he is. But as for right now, I do not.
So this supposedly best cop, the greatest cop working, he's doing some of the worst sneaking I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
He's just stomping around. He's a big limbed man. He's just knocking into things, dropping things, talking out loud to himself. Nobody else is around. And before this meeting's even half over, these guys who are like a full football field away from him are just like, what's all that fucking racket going on over there? Like, there's an insane amount of noise happening in that direction. Let's go figure it out.
They chase him. He thinks he gets away.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he goes to the liquor store, gets in a liquor store fight.
Okay, so like our next scene, they hear him. They go after him. He just runs. He gets in his car, drives away. I figured like something was going to happen. Like, okay, how do they figure out what he is? Do they catch a glimpse of him? Does his license plate fall off his car or
something? Yeah, I was like, oh, they probably get the license plate.
Nothing happens.
Yeah, nothing.
Next scene, jump cut into him just going into a liquor store for no fucking reason. It's like, narratively, what reason could we be watching this cop who was just in a high danger stakeout situation casually walk into a liquor? Oh, I get it. This entire liquor store is about to get destroyed.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Wouldn't you know who won the pony? He's in there for fucking 30 seconds talking to this curmudgeonly liquor store owner when a whole gang of street toughs come in with a shotgun trying to rob the place, Matt. Who would have thunk it? What are the odds?
Pretty good, I'd say, if it's a Steven Seagal movie. I like that he goes in there and he says to the liquor store owner, and he's like, do you guys have champagne? And the liquor store owner's like, yeah, right next to the fucking caviar. But seriously,
we've got a lot of, I like the kid, but we do have, this is a professional liquor store.
Yeah.
As of any other of our competitors, we also stock plenty of champagne.
Right.
So please go into the cooler and get some.
When he said that joke, I was like, why would it be far-fetched that he has champagne at a liquor store? And then he cleared it up.
This is just a goof, just to get a laugh.
Yeah. But, you know, for being a dickhead, the liquor store owner gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
By these Mexican street toughs.
Yeah, they shotgun him right in the chest.
Yeah.
I gotta imagine there's security cameras in there and whatnot, and they're not wearing masks or anything.
No.
These guys are reckless criminals, I'm gonna say, Matt. Especially because once they shotgun this fucking liquor store owner, they start trying to shotgun Steven Seagal.
Which is dumb.
Like, you think this guy's just gonna stand there and get shotgunned? Give me a fucking break.
He beats everybody up except for one guy that's left that's holding the fakest rubber knife I've ever seen in my life.
Real good.
And
this guy, what he had though, was very realistic drug face.
Oh yeah,
this guy was a really good actor. Or they legitimately fucking like
let him do
locked him in a room and let him do drugs for 3 days before they filmed this scene.
They're
very impressed with his performance.
Finish this bag of PCP before you come out onto the set.
Maybe
here.
A little bit of a coincidence that he happened to wander into a liquor store robbery, but this is the scene that's going to let us establish this isn't just a normal ponytailed cop. This is a cop that knows Aikido, Matt.
Yeah.
So we get to see all of his joint manipulation. He's twisting wrists. He's popping elbows out of the socket. He's giving us all this unique fat guy fighting style that Steven Seagal loves to do, where he just stands stationary, people walk over to him, give him their limbs, and then he just does a couple little motions and doesn't really have to burn many calories to do anything all that exciting in order to effectively fight.
He does his stuff with a lot of force, though.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, it was a unique fighting style for action films, and I think dads all over the country were loving it.
Yeah,
I remember my biological father, my stepfather, they didn't agree on much. But back in this era, they were super stoked about all this limb-popping shit Steven Seagal was doing.
Yeah, My old man was a Seagal fan.
I think the dads of America were fucking lining this guy's pockets in the late 80s, early 90s. He really tapped into something they were loving.
So he ices everybody, and then the other cops show up, and they're like, oh, Mason Storm, you done did it again.
We all know you. You're probably the most famous cop who ever lived.
You old salty dog, you.
So if we got one coincidence that he stumbles into this liquor store, here's our next coincidence. When he calls up his buddy down at the precinct and is like, Mason Storm, I'm telling you right now, I got a lot of really incendiary evidence on camera here. Yeah. There's a lot of really illegal stuff happening. And it just so happens, when he calls his friend to tell him what he's got on camera, every other cop in the precinct is a dirty cop in William Sadler's dirty senator's pocket. Mm-hmm. And they just so happen to be like, well, there's a random phone call coming in. We should probably pick up on the other end of the line and listen in on it. Hey, are they doing this for literally every phone call that comes into the police precinct? Or I don't know, but they hear and they're like, oh, he says he's got some stuff on tape. That must be what our dirty senator boss was doing, which we're fully aware of. We're going to have to tell him it was Mason Storm, who's the one who knows that he's not a senator yet, to see what the thing is.
Oh, yeah.
He's trying to become senator.
That's right.
And in order to make this easier, he's paying off some Goombas to knock off the incumbent here.
Yeah.
To grease the wheels
here. It's
going
to be a plane crash, you
make
see.
Make this election go a little smoother. Mason Storm's got it all on video camera. And these guys now know that Mason Storm has it on video camera. Smash cut to our next scene where he shows up at home with that champagne. He gets his wife's titties out. He's playing with her titties.
So you started acting. How old were you when you started acting?
My first film, I was 11.
11 years old. So this is from, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is your first red carpet premiere.
It is my first.
Under Siege 2. That's Steven Seagal and Eric Bogosian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes. What do you think Steven said in that moment?
Oh, who? Kenny, I would love to know what Steven said.
I would love to know, too. I have no recollection.
Did he say, is there anything he said during the shooting that sticks out for you, Seagal-wise? He seems very quotable.
Yeah, probably. Well, my favorite was at the last day of filming. And again, I had just turned 16 on this movie. And he said, you know, Katie, I've got girlfriends your age. And I said, isn't that illegal? And he said, they don't seem to mind. And I said, Mom. I'm not making that up. Steven, I love you.
Well, that brings us to this photograph because this was taken. This was taken that very day.
Oh my God!
Steven,
Mom?
Was... That's not Mom, is it? Because you're not paying attention.
Yeah, I can't see with the big sunglasses.
Yeah, you don't remember. He was getting his handprints. Well, not just in the cement over there, but he was getting his handprints all over you.
Well, he hides the camera first, though.
Yeah.
Can't let anybody find it.
A little, alcove thing in the wall in his...
I don't know.
I have no idea what that thing was.
He's like, I'm in the icebox.
Yeah. Looked like he was just putting it in a cabinet.
That's
here
what
in
I
1983,
thought.
But then in 1990, when he goes back, he has to, like, tear off some wallpaper and, like, dig
wall.
Into the wall. Yeah. And I'm like, he didn't do this originally when we saw him stashing the camera.
No.
But it's important to remember that the camera is stashed because he barely gets up into his bedroom, barely gets his hand on his wife's beautiful titties one last time.
Well, after he prays with his son. Prayer's important. Don't forget.
That's a very important. That was fucking weird.
Dad, I didn't go to sleep. I pretended to be asleep so that I could pray with you.
He's got a son, Sonny.
It's very good, son.
They're a very religious family.
Let's pray together.
Even though he seems to mostly be influenced by Eastern culture, it seems like they'd be like
his
meditating
together
or whatnot. His
father was a missionary.
Oh, that's why he's... That's right. He does say that.
Yeah.
See, I try to like... Nay-nay and poo-poo these Steven Seagal characters, but he's...
No, these are very well
very
fleshed
well
out.
Very well constructed. Yeah. You know that he's got influence in these things.
I'm going to give you a list of my interests, and I want every single one of them built into
That's
this.
Right.
I like to pray. I love going to church.
This is stuff I'm into.
I've recently read about acupuncture. We're going to put some of this in here.
I'm going to do this thing where I do my own acupuncture.
At some point, something Mexican's going to happen so I can show off my Mexican accent.
which is the best. He's that white person that's just like, oh, anytime I say something Hispanic, I got to put like extra emphasis on it to make it look like I'm
fucking
familiar
Paul Rodriguez
with the culture
over here.
Or whatever. Oh, Jesus.
Very cultured, man.
So, yeah, he prays, he paws at the wife, and then, oh shit, there's masked men in the house with a lot of guns.
They bust into the bedroom mid foreplay, just start shotgunning the place to hell. Seagal takes one in the fucking side, and then there's this one shot that's fucking tremendous. I don't know why it's not just like a may-may all over the internet. This thing's fucking gif-able. It should be. Where he just realizes he's been shot. He realizes his wife's in danger. We just get a still shot of his face, and then he runs towards the camera and just goes, "Motherfucker!"
Oh, yeah.
It's hilarious. His fucking delivery, the face he makes, the like fucking weird little old man gallop he starts doing. And then he just starts. These guys all have shotguns, so like he's not just like trying to knock guns out of their hand and like get the guns trained off of his wife. He's like, gotta go into my joint manipulation just like, he's fucking flipping wrists and trying to pop elbows and shit. And sure, he gets one or two of them, but there's like four guys in there. So when he's like taking all the time to do all this shit, they just start shotgunning in the room.
They're like,
they fucking blast his wife and her beautiful titties.
He's really wasting a lot of time. I'm going to shoot his wife.
He gets full-on RoboCop. Like, he gets like six or seven just fucking shotgun shells all throughout his body. We get some nice bright red splattery blood going on.
Yeah.
It's a really good fucking death scene. A lot of slow-mo of like close-ups of people's faces giving slow-mo.
No, don't do it.
He's saying that when his wife gets shotgunned. Yeah. She's looking at him get shotgunned. She gives some This is very dramatic.
And then speaking of slow-mos, Sonny, the idiot kid.
Toe-headed young boy comes trotting down the hallway to see what all these shotgun noises
are. Walk towards all that gunfire I hear.
They're just like, oh, fuck, there's a kid. We literally came over here within 30 seconds of hearing who this guy is. We did no research. Like, from the first scene of this movie to this fucking murder, I'm going to say 17 minutes have passed real time
pretty much
in this fucking movie. Like, it's insane how quickly all this shit comes together. Oscar night 1983.
So apparently these bad guys are badass at murdering people with guns as long as you're over 5 foot tall.
And also all these guys are just the corrupt cops from the precinct.
Yeah.
So they should know that Sonny is the son of Mason Storm here, because I'm sure Mason Storm is talking about nothing other than his wife and kid and how much he loves them all day long down at the police station.
Cookie Cop, I'm praying with my kid the other night. And he's such a good prayer. And we're just hanging out.
I do the first
prayer
myself, but then I make him do the second line along with me. He always knows what it is.
He's so good at doing prayers.
So, yeah, they can't shoot. If you want
to
talk hard to kill, it's the kid.
There's a kid there. They're fucking suddenly, like, there's a callback to this scene later on, too, because he just starts running from dirty cops again, and they can't shoot him. It starts to look like stormtroopers fighting Ewoks anytime there's kids around and people got to shoot him.
There's a great scene I love where it's like you think Sonny's dead because he jumps out a fucking second story window as they shoot him.
But apparently this is a thing he's been doing for a while, this little like 5 year old or whatever. I think he's been sneaking out every night. His window's open. He clearly knows how to get out on the ledge or whatever. He's very, very adept at it. He disappears out that window.
Yeah.
And we're not shown where he goes. The next scene's just in the hospital. We got William Sadler, our dirty senator. He's in there talking to the press, and he's like, I love Mason Storm. I've known Mason Storm my whole life, ever since I was a lowly DA or whatever the fuck he's talking about.
We did some cases together.
He's one of the best cops of all time. He's really just hamming it up. And it's like, you just ordered this guy murdered, you sleazebag.
You piece of shit.
And this is where we meet
O'Malley.
Frederick Coffin's in. He's just like, I want all these other cops out of here. I'm Mason Storm's only friend. Yeah. I raised him up from a pup. He's the best man who ever lived.
I know you're all dirty motherfuckers.
Oh, yeah. He's working internal affairs.
Pieces of shit.
And we get some more strange coincidences happen because, like, the fucking the main doctor in here, yeah. The operator's like, I want to announce to the entire world that Mason Storm is dead.
He's dead as fuck.
Dead on our operating table.
And everybody in that second is just like, all right, good enough, I'm out.
We're out. 30 seconds later, he's like, O'Malley, hey, wait a second. Turns out Mason Storm's alive, and only you are knowing about this right now.
Do you want to see him?
O'Malley's like, oh, this is a great coincidence.
Do you want to come into this operating room and see him?
Okay, everybody operating on him right now. We're going to pull some sort of bamboozle here. Yeah. I'm going to make him disappear. You tell everybody he's dead.
He's going to be dead, see?
Trust me, I got the mayor to sign off on this, so this mass fraud we're committing here, it's cool.
The commissioner of the police.
So many great coincidences happen, yeah. So we can move this movie along, and we don't have to worry about believability or logistics or anything. So, don't worry, chalk it all up to serendipity, happenstance.
I love that movie, Serendipity.
Matt,
that glove.
Vamp for a second. I'm going to get more coffee.
Well, oh, okay. I'm going to vape for a little bit. I'm getting a vape out. So 7 years go by. He's in the hospital. He's in a coma. He's got even longer hair now, and he's got this really bad long goatee. The goatee's really cool. And Kelly LeBrock's his nurse. And she's just doing things like looking at his penis.
Okay, I'm coming back.
And just being like, hey, you want some pussy? Okay, hey, want some pussy?
We need to slow down because I want to stop one of my big bullet points. I want to talk about is his coma goatee.
Yeah.
Which is super weird. Yeah. He's got a full-on evil wizard's goatee.
Right.
Just like some nice gray fucking like, you know, sides. He's got some like some Reed Richards fucking gray, but on the goatee, not on his temples. And that's it. It's a perfect goatee. It's not a beard. It's not like a Rip Van Winkle beard.
No.
What's going on here? Does Steven Seagal legitimately not grow any hair on his sideburns and his cheeks? Is Kelly LeBrock shaving it into a weird goatee every day? Because she's like, you know what would look super good? A real long, weird, evil wizard goatee?
You zoned out in the middle of the movie where they explain everything.
I remember when he clean shaves himself and she's like, oh, looks nice.
Right
and
before
I was like,
that scene, though.
Well, yeah, of course. Like, why weren't you shaving his face every day?
Right
You're
before,
his fucking nurse.
Right before that scene when he's trying to eat that rice...
Yeah.
He turns to her and goes...
Everything he does is Asian.
He turns to her and goes, did you give me this beard? And she sheepishly is like, yeah. Yeah, I did.
Did she do it as a prank?
I don't know.
Has she got a weird fetish? What's going on here?
Her weird fetish is looking at coma guys' penises.
Okay, so... We got to talk about Steven Seagal and the influence he has over this script. Because you know he's got it written into his contract that the hot nurse has to comment how big his penis is.
Yeah.
So weird, so unprofessional, happens for no reason.
Right.
She's looking under his sheets just like, oh, man, please wake up.
Yeah, like,
I want to wrap my lips around that big fat hog.
Yeah, mama needs it. And she's like... You have so much more to offer to life. So much.
Earlier, when he's about to get down on his wife, too, there's a scene where she's just, like, lovingly, like, fiddling with his ponytail, his tiny little Steven Seagal ponytail, like, twirling it in her fingers.
Yeah,
and it really made my skin crawl.
Yeah.
Just all throughout this movie, women are responding to him like he's super sexy. I'm just like, somebody touching that tiny, greasy ponytail lovingly, just really, really messing with my head.
So he comes out of the ponytail. He comes out of the coma.
Yeah, she's got a tiny kitten too.
Yeah.
You talked about that, right? She's like,
You want a little
a bunch
pussy?
Of pussy jokes.
You want a little pussy?
Like, this is also just had to be. This whole scene, I think Steven Seagal's just like, I don't like the coma waking up scene. I'm gonna do some changes. I want to write some. This has got Steven Seagal all over it.
She has the little kitten. She's got a cat button on her coat. She's got a cat bag. That she's carrying. I do believe Kelly LeBrock in real life is a cat lady.
Like, oh yeah.
Like I want to say, like I saw her on like a celebrity wife swap or something.
Cats. We need to get some cats in this movie.
Yeah. Like when she was really fat, I saw her on something.
I'm just the cook, but I'm also gonna be the screenwriter.
Yeah. So I think that was Kelly LeBrock. If she was like, if you get to talk about how big your dick is and how cool you are, let me. have cats.
I got to feel like...
He's like, that's okay. I like that.
The lesson of this film is that this is a couple movies in for Steven Seagal. He's making the studio some money in those first ones. They're surprised by it. And it only took like two times out before he's just like, I'm a megastar.
Yeah.
Fucking from now on, I'm producing my own movies. Yeah. Like, my fingerprints are going to be all over these things.
I do whatever the fuck I want.
From this point, it just gets worse and worse until we hit On Deadly Ground, which is just fully his, like, idea top to bottom. He's getting all his weird things in. Just the whole movie's about, like, what a deep, kind, smart, badass man he is. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, he ruined himself. We're straight to video in like a 5-year period here. We're going from on top of the world to straight to video just because Steven Seagal's a fucking nut job.
He's insane.
I was cast in the film The Glimmer Man, which starred Steven Seagal and Keenan Ivory Wayans. I was working the first day of the movie. First day. And John Gray, the director, comes in to my trailer and says, so, how's everything going? I go, well, fine, John, fine. We're having a problem. I go, what's wrong? He says, well, Steven Seagal has had a spiritual sort of crisis and sort of a spiritual awakening. He decided that he doesn't want to kill people anymore in movies.
I can't fight, man.
What do you mean you can't fight? It's a fine time to tell me now.
Warner Brothers is very upset. They say, Steven, I understand what you're doing, but you dance with who brung you. You kill people really good. Hey! And in this movie, you have to kill people. And he doesn't want to do it. The problem is, in the scene, I was playing a serial killer, and the whole scene is about him killing me. So John says, Steven Seagal is going to try to convince you not to kill you in this scene. Don't get into a conversation with him. Whatever you do, don't talk to him. He has to kill you. I mean, it's the first day of shooting. This is very difficult for all films and actors. You know, they want to see good footage the first day. I said, well, I'll steer clear of Steven. So we got called to the set, and that was the first time I met Steven on the set. And he came up to me, and he had that cool persona that, what do you think about this scene? And I was saying, well, Steven, it's pretty hard-hitting scene. In this scene, by the way, I play a serial killer, and I grab a priest, and I threaten to blow his head off, and then Steven comes in and ends up murdering me. So I said, Steven, it's a pretty intense scene. He says, I think it would probably be better if I don't kill you. I said, I hear you. And Steven says, I think it's just bad that we keep putting this violence into the world. I mean, we're creating a sicker and sicker society by putting this kind of thing out into the world. I said, I understand that, Stephen, but this case may be an exception. I'm looking at my life as a serial killer, and I feel I'm trapped in this broken soul that I'm inhabiting. And it would really help me in terms of my reincarnational development if you could kill me, and then I would be able to leave this body and actually transcend into a better life, into a better body. You would actually be helping me. So I would be giving you a helping hand? I said, oh, you'd be giving everybody a helping hand. You'd be removing evil from the world. You'd be giving me a new chance at life in a new body sometime in the near future. I never thought of it that way. All right. I'll kill you in this scene.
I can't. You don't understand. Go ahead and kill me. Kill me. I dare you. Kill me.
Do it now or I will kill you. You believe it? One. This is
God's house. Don't make me do this.
Please.
Don't.
Three.
And then... And I fall out of frame. 2 months later, I get a phone call from John saying, we have a problem. Steven started ad-libbing in the rest of the film how he's glad he didn't kill the guy in the church. Is there some way you could come back in and in ADR make it seem like you're not dead? So I go back in and I'm going to loop a scene, and Kenan Ivory Wayans is standing next to me. He's watching what I have to loop. So this is what they have. They have me backing up to camera, Steven pulling up a gun, firing. My entire chest explodes, like my heart explodes, like blood flies out at the camera, and I fall out of frame, and smoke rises into the thing as Steven Seagal walks into the shot, and John Gray whispers, "Now right here, if you could say something to make it sound like you're still alive." I said, "Say something to make it sound like I'm still alive. Like, it's just a flesh wound." I mean, it was like an Austin Powers moment. I ended up shouting up, "Finish me off, you son of a bitch. Come on, don't leave me like this. Kill me." It was horrible. Kenan Ivory Wayans just looked at me and said, "Man, now we are in the realm of high comedy."
So he comes out of the coma and he's like, "People are going to try and kill me. You got to get me out of here, weird science girl." And she's like, "Whoa, you know, take it easy, bro. Like, I don't know, man." And then, like, sure as shit, fake doctor comes with a gun.
That's right.
And then they have a Scooby-Doo, like, elevator chase. Mm-hmm. Where,
once again, within seconds, yeah, these people are so vigilant, these dirty cops on the payroll of our fucking corrupt senator. 7 years later, they're still just monitoring this situation closely.
Yeah. Well, she, like,
down to the second.
She tries to call O'Malley at the internal affairs, and they're like, "He doesn't work here anymore. Well, you can tell us. It's cool."
She's like, "We got a John Doe who woke up here."
Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, we know what that means. That must be Mason Storm who got disappeared."
Well, yeah.
"We've suspected this for the last 7 years."
Yeah. O'Malley was like, "I'm going to make him disappear, but I'm also going to attach a case number to John Doe." And so they figure it
within
out.
Within seconds, they are at the hospital trying to kill him. These are the most efficient, just organized.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are great employees up until it gets to the point where they actually have to shoot somebody, and then wildly
they
inept.
Up, yeah.
But I want these guys working in my office for sure.
Absolutely.
I want these guys running the
some
day-to-day of my business. Like,
some real go-getters.
Talk about being on top of things.
So he's still, like, paralyzed because of the coma and just can, like, barely move his arms.
This is great.
He's pushing himself around with a mop.
It's like he's playing "The Floor is Lava" as a fucking adult who looks like an evil wizard.
Right.
This is some, we get some cat and mouse things where the cop who's come to kill him somehow just keeps being able not to, even though he's pushing himself down the hall with a mop and a bed on wheels.
So, yeah, whatever.
This supposed action movie, we've got this one scene where he beats the shit out of four guys in a liquor store. We get the one brief scene where he's shotgunned to death. And now we get this fucking mop thing. It's like a desert of fucking satisfying action so far.
Yeah.
This far into this fucking movie, hard to kill. At this point, I'm just rubbing my face with my hands, just like, oh, God, when are we gonna get some good action going on in here?
Not anytime soon.
Oh, no. We've got more to go.
Now Kelly LeBrock takes him to her house, some doctor's house that she's watching that's in China for 6 months. 6 months,
that's
Nate.
That's right, yeah. She explains to him, "Don't worry. I've told no one about the fact that I'm house-sitting here for 6 months. No one knows about this place. There's no way we can be tracked here." I'm just like, really? This doctor's beautiful compound,
you've
got it to yourself for 6 months and you haven't told anyone?
Yeah.
This is just a secret you're keeping to yourself?
Unless he was like, "You tell no one."
This also is the woman who's just, like, fucking boned up over Steven Seagal in a coma. So clearly she's a weird bird.
Yeah.
She's not living a normal life. Maybe it makes sense.
Yeah, so whatever. They're clearly at Steven Seagal's real house because there's just Asian stuff everywhere, and there's horses.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like, all that land and, like,
this is probably Steven Seagal's real house.
Like, there's the montage, you know, of, like, him rehabilitating himself, and they go out of their way to show how, like, gorgeous the house is and the land.
This montage here, he's just like, "I'm going to need you to go into Chinatown and buy me some herbs."
Yeah.
And he writes down some, like, Chinese lettering, and she's like, "Oh, my God, you can write in Chinese?" And he's just, he starts mansplaining to this nurse, like how to heal a coma patient, like bring him back to physical health. And she's just like, oh, yes, tell me how to do it, fucking city cop. Like, I need all your wisdom how to heal coma patients when my entire fucking job is healing coma patients.
Well, plus, too, she's like,
got so much wisdom.
She's like, how'd you learn to write in Chinese? And he's like, well, you know, I took karate.
Aikido. Aikido.
And then, like, never explains it. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. So whatever. He montages to get himself back into health.
If there's anything I love, it's a fucking great montage where somebody's training themselves up for a big task. And this one's perfect. He's fucking putting herbs on the end of needles, lighting them on fire and sticking them in his body. He's fucking planting boards in the ground and punching the shit out of boards.
There's great 90s action movie montage music playing, but with a nice Asian like twinge to it.
The score of this movie is fucking insane.
It's good.
Because the first scene where like we get that shot I talked about, it's like gritty crime movie shit.
Right.
Whenever he does anything Asian, it just goes into stereotypical, like, insane Asian sounds.
Pan
whenever
flute shit.
He starts sexing up a woman, it immediately just goes into, like, sultry fucking sexy sax. It's like, there's no theme that plays throughout the whole thing. There's
no
connective tissue between the music at all. It's like, every single scene is scored completely separately as if it's its own short film. Like, it's the most schizophrenic fucking movie music I've ever been around. It's assaulting, and in a million different ways.
Like, if you were, like, making a movie and couldn't afford to put real music in there and just went to, like, that rights-free music.
I mean,
and
that's
just
gotta
like,
be what happened
you
here,
just, like,
right?
Like, search, like, action movie scene, and then they're like, oh, this will work.
Literally just like an ASCAP representative
Asian
standing
movie
over
scene,
their shoulder
yeah.
like, nope, can't use that one. Nope, can't use that one. Oh, we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel here looking for music.
Works so well. So he montages, gets
My
himself back
My favorite part of the montage
health.
Is when he's doing all this stuff and it just stops for a second so that Kelly LeBrock can walk into the shot, look at him, shake her head, and be like, Mason Storm.
Mason Storm.
He's incorrigible. And then right back into montage.
Yeah. And then we get the sex scene, which I really like.
Oh, yeah. I noted, though, I think like this whole 7 years in a coma and then he's got to build himself back up thing. It's really just like the perfect explanation for why this ultimate badass super cop has no physique whatsoever.
Yeah.
He really
that's
covered
true.
All his grounds on that level. Like, I want you to come up with a reason why I'm so out of shape.
Why is he just kind of
for
like,
being the ultimate fighter?
Like doughy.
But yeah, she gives him like a good, I don't know, 2 to 3 days to get back on his feet and get back into health. And then she's just like, all right, I'm putting some hairspray in my hair.
Yeah.
I'm dialing up
teasing
my face.
Teasing the shit out of it.
And I'm just going to interrupt one of his workouts dressed to the nines and be like, fucking dick on the table. I want you to know we're fucking. I've been thinking about fucking you for years.
His workout that she interrupts is him just practicing karate chops.
Just swinging his arms
just
in the air.
Windmill karate chops. Just going. And
she
just
like,
comes
oh,
in. And essentially,
he's really at it night and day.
Essentially,
soon he's going to be an Adonis.
She just comes in and she's just such a good word. She's just like, hey, did you want to fuck? And he's like, I mean, I'm really hung up on my dead wife, but like, dog will hunt.
For fucking sure.
So they bang. They're an item now.
Some more slow motion, just like
I don't know. Where does this movie
bodies,
go after this?
Some more saxophone.
Oh, O'Malley shows up.
At this point, though, I want to take a second to let us know that we get two. Well, Kelly LeBrock's not necessarily a no-name, but she hasn't been acting. She's basically a no-name.
Yeah.
The chick who plays his wife is some no-name. I didn't know her. Both fucking shapely women. Both attractive women. We get them stripped down completely topless. And then there's a full-on just, like, gratuitous sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see either of their tits.
Yeah.
I think there's a scene later on.
At the senator's compound?
Yeah, there's just, like, he's with a topless slut in a hot tub just to show, like, this guy's a real sleazebag.
You get a half second of side
tits. He's, like, get out of the hot tub, random skank. I got business. She's just some random fucking model they yanked off the street.
Yeah.
She gets up out of the hot tub, totally topless. Yeah, a tiny bit of side boob. Why is this movie... This movie's a hard R.
Yeah.
It's got a bunch of no-name titty models. They get them all topless, and they don't show us a single fucking areola through this whole movie?
Yeah, that
What's
that
the deal? What's going on here?
You get some sweet...
Living in crazy town.
You get some sweet late 80s, early 90s ass and thong from his wife.
Sure, I love those high-waisted thongs, but yeah. Come on. This is... It's basically the 80s still, a 1990 release. Why aren't there gratuitous titties throughout this whole thing?
Yeah, there aren't. O'Malley comes back.
That's right. She goes looking for O'Malley, ends up talking to his very cagey elderly mother, and it's just like an A to B connection that doesn't need to exist. Like,
right.
Why not just find O'Malley? That. That's a whole weird scene. We need to write in some more talking scenes for my wife. She's not getting enough. She's not getting enough spotlight in this movie.
Yeah, so O'Malley's like, hey, you were right about everything.
Mason Storm.
I got files on all these guys, mm-hmm. and great news.
Yeah.
Your son's alive.
Secretly alive.
I gave him my mom's maiden name and put him in some school.
This is where I'm starting to think, can we get like a hard-to-kill prequel? Maybe like a boarding school movie where something happens at the boarding school
Sonny's
got to dislocate some elbows.
Sonny Storm is son of hard to kill.
Let's talk about some gratuitous shit that doesn't need to be in this movie.
Okay.
As we're talking about these talking scenes Kelly LeBrock's getting. Why isn't this just a movie where bad guys come and shotgun Mason Storm's wife and kid and then he needs to get revenge? What's up with this secret plot where the kid survives?
The kid has to be squirreled away.
The kid comes back alive. Plot-wise, to push the narrative along, the kid still being alive adds up to fucking nothing, Matt. There's
absolutely
no reason
nothing.
For it. They get a... It's just also... I don't know. There can be a tear-filled reunion between father and son at the end. Like, this kid being alive doesn't lead to anything. It's not like they ever get their hands on him and they're like, we got your kids, Sonny, so now you gotta come to our compound and step into our trap or your kid's gonna get it. Like, no reason. It leads to nothing.
It doesn't make a whole lot of
sense. What's all this hide and seek with the kid?
Just
give me more action. Yeah. I don't need more convoluted plot. It's a simple revenge movie here. We shotgunned your wife and kid. Now come back and kill everybody who was involved. Hard to kill. You fucking crazy.
Yeah. I've also found that old girl that played Seagal's wife, she showed her titties later on in other movies.
Fuck. Why aren't we watching those movies? I'm getting mad now.
It doesn't make any sense. So a whole lot of nonsense is happening. I don't know where we're at anymore. Like, what's happening in this movie?
Okay. So throughout the entire movie, as, like, anything's happening, we just keep getting shots in the background of, like, this senator on the TV saying his catchphrase, you can take it to the bank. You can take that to the bank.
He finally...
You'll take this to the bank. While every time this is happening in the background, you also get Seagal muttering to himself, like... there's something about this guy I had on videotape 7 years ago. There's something so familiar about him. I can't figure out what it is.
Like, Geraldo.
It's almost like I know his voice.
Geraldo.
Or like maybe he's got a catchphrase that he says over and over again. I'm not quite putting it together in my brain. For some reason, I'm starting to do Keanu. I guess it's just because this character is so fucking rock stupid.
Yeah.
Just so simple. But just the most clunky hit you over the head storytelling going on. Here finally we get the amazing fucking scene, the standout, the reason you're watching Hard to Kill. We're after fucking an hour and 15 minutes or something a movie, he connects it. The guy saying you can take it to the bank on his video is the same senator saying you can take it to the bank all over the news.
Yeah.
And he remarks the fucking legendary line of this movie, I'm gonna take you to the bank, Senator Trent. To the blood bank.
Yeah, that's a cool line.
If the rest of this movie is fucking terrible, which it might be, I don't want to show all my cards right here.
Yeah.
It's worth it for that fucking line right there.
Right after he figures it all out, a million guys come to kill him.
Yep, and finally, I think we're like an hour and 10 minutes into this 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
We get our first great fucking action scene.
Right.
Where they're just in this doctor who's in China's house, him and Kelly LeBrock, and it just gets surrounded, and they just start trying to shotgun the shit out of him again.
Yeah.
We're going to shotgun you right back into a coma. Oh, you got a new woman? We're going to shotgun her tits off like we did the last one.
Yeah.
And he's just like, not this time. And he just starts fucking mowing through all these guys.
He does. He's got a gun that O'Malley gave him, and he's shooting people. Does he throw a fucking grenade at some point? And, like, where did he get the grenade?
He's diving from machine gun fire right and left. They're, like, climbing under a couch or something.
Yeah.
And then he just, like, I don't know, reaches into his jeans and pulls a grenade out of his
dick. Yeah, like, I was just like, wondering, like, did
I... We get this scene where him and O'Malley are talking, and O'Malley's like, I brought you your gun because I thought you'd want it. And he's just like... You know, you did a good thing here, or whatever. And then
here's the one grenade.
Shoots
you
the shit
carry.
Out of some pottery out in the distance, and that's a cool scene.
Yeah. But
yeah, I guess there was also a grenade. Fucking,
they didn't show it.
Passed back and forth at some point.
Like I thought, maybe,
grenade out of nowhere.
I thought maybe I missed like one of the dirty cops throw the grenade, and he did like the grab it real quick and throw
if
it
you
back.
You missed an explanation for why this grenade shows up. So did I, buddy.
People want to poo-poo. The mystery of Schwarzenegger's grenade in True Lies.
Mm-hmm.
No, this hard to kill grenade.
Yeah,
far more confusing.
It's a real whodunit.
Hard to figure
out. One of my other favorite lines from this movie is when he's just fighting these guys. He fights them here, and then just somehow leads into he's fighting them at the senator's compound.
Yeah,
and they're all playing pool around a pool table. So he snaps a pool cue over his knee. And then sees one of the guys that shotgunned his wife and just goes, this is for my wife. Fuck you and die. And then fucking like Vampire Hunter stakes the fucking the billiard or the fucking pool cue into his neck. Like a full foot into his neck. Fuck you and die.
Yeah. And like the
some great delivery from Seagal in this movie.
The special effects, they don't even try to like do like gaudy like makeup and stuff.
Yeah,
they just kind of tuck the pool cue into his shirt.
Sure.
Like, see, it's stuck in his neck. It's in the collar there.
We go from the botched hit at the compound, I think straight into just he's coming for them at the senator's compound. So the senator's like, slut in the hot tub.
Well,
get out of here.
Real quick, he and O'Malley get together and they're like, all right, O'Malley, you've got the audio tape that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go get the videotape I have.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get my son as well. Send him to Albuquerque.
This stuff happens in the span of like 4 minutes.
Right.
Because we've been spending the last 45 minutes dicking around doing fucking nothing.
Doing karate chops.
So it's like, oh, geez, we're deep into the third act.
Oh, boy, we got to do something.
We got to, A, get some action in this movie finally. B, we got to wrap up every unnecessary loose thread we've created for no fucking reason.
So he's like, you do all that, I'll do all this, and then you bring the audio tape, I'll bring the videotape, and we show up at Kenny Phelps's local access news. And they're like, are you sure, Kenny Phelps? He's like, Kenny Phelps, that's where we're going. So he and old girl go to where Kenny Phelps's studio is and get on the payphone outside of Kenny Phelps's studio and make some calls, and they're like, well, O'Malley, you got to get down here. We're going to be at this hotel. We're not staying there, but we'll be at this hotel. And, of course,
the dirty cops
intercept that, too, and they're like, we'll catch them at the fucking hotel.
If they could have just texted each other, if this movie was set 10 years later, these dirty cops would have had no idea any of this stuff was going on.
And so, like, I don't know. They chase them at the hotel. And then he chases them.
Yeah.
And then they chase his kid.
During the middle of this chase, he gets reunited with his son. And it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm your son who's alive. We get reunited. Either way, the movie's got to wrap up, so.
And he kills Lorenzo Lamas's Indian buddy from Renegade.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, he gives the kid to Kelly LeBrock. And now he's like, all right.
Super weird
scene. I'm going to the senators.
Where the kid's just like, who the fuck are you, lady? And then she instantly just starts, like, lovingly stroking his face.
She's like,
don't worry about it. I'm a strange lady.
It's a long story. I'm going to touch your face.
Quit touching his face, lady. You're a stranger.
She still looked pretty good in 1990. And if I was, like, a 12-year-old kid, I'd be like, all right,
but that's not what
me.
It's establishing. What it's establishing is, don't worry, we've got a new family going on here.
I'm your new mom.
This is Mason Storm's new family. Everything's going to work out for him.
Yeah.
That first lady you got shotgunned, it doesn't matter. Like, he's going to be fine. His life's going great.
Yeah. Did you even catch Kelly LeBrock's name in this?
I think her name was just Nurse. I think everybody was calling her Nurse.
Either way, so he's... All right, so he's like...
Wasn't as cool as Mason Storm, I'll tell you that much.
He's
Nurse
like,
Storm, that's her name after they get married after the end credits.
He's like, I'm going to go to the senator's palatial estate.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, there's like a pop art painting of William Sadler over the fireplace in this house.
Yeah.
That I would love to get my fucking hands on.
That,
if I could mount that thing in my living room here, it'd be great for me.
Her name's Andy Stewart.
Andy Storm, as I'm concerned.
Do they ever even say Andy in the movie?
I don't remember a single instance of her being called Andy.
Edit out every scene. Apparently, this movie was much longer, and Warner Brothers was like, 90 minutes is good.
So I want to we're at the end. I want to talk about what a lame fucking popcorn fart of a finish this fucking ending is. You got William Sadler as the big bad guy.
Yeah.
He's great at playing a dickhead, but he doesn't even do anything throughout this movie. He shows up for maybe like 4 minutes of screen time total. You don't see him directly doing anything evil. It's just his goons doing it. You don't even see him ordering it. Like, there's no big central bad guy villain that needs to be taken down in this revenge movie, so there's nothing to build to. And then finally you get to the big confrontation between the two, where he's mowed through all of the bad guys video game style. He's leveled up to get to the big boss.
He stalked one of them for like 15 minutes and wrote shit on the walls.
Yeah, we do
for
get
like
some
no
like
reason.
John Rambo, like fucking I'm hiding in the shadows, fucking with you stuff. For a little bit, but then like when they're about to have their big face off, like fucking Dalton and Ben Gazzara in a roadhouse or something, all the cops burst in. They're surrounded by cops, and it's like, oh, we got our guns on you, and it's like, oh no, Mason Storm's gonna get taken down before he can fucking take out this dirty senator.
He's really, really close.
But then it's like, nope, we're doing the get out twist.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, your videotape got to us. We know that he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
A dirty senator, you're under arrest.
Yeah.
And it's like, this dirty senator ordered his family killed. He's 7 long years in a coma. He built himself back up to peak physical condition for Seagal. And we don't even get a grisly death at the end of this revenge film. The bad guy's put into handcuffs and then taken away. This rich white guy, like, I don't care if they have him on videotape. They had R. Kelly on videotape peeing in a 14-year-old girl's mouth. Like, this guy's getting off. This is the worst ending I can imagine.
Hey, R. Kelly was getting off, too.
And we all were watching that video back in 2000.
Yeah. It's weird. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And plus, like, it's like he's been in a coma for 7 years. Mm-hmm. He's not really a cop anymore, I don't think.
I don't know. Did being a cop go away?
I don't know, but he's just been going around killing people.
Yeah, he's certainly like, not.
Is he going to do jail time for that?
Also, like, Kelly LeBrock's just like, well, I'm going to stop being a nurse and go live with you in the country. None of them are getting any paychecks. Like, who's feeding these two during this whole fucking movie?
It's weird, but... He's got a new family, and the senator goes to the jail.
I love you, new mom.
Where,
I love you, Sonny.
Yeah, where she's where senator's.
Does she have an accent, or does she just talk weird? Where's Kelly LeBrock from?
She's British.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she just talks weird.
You talk like y'all from London. I think she's British.
I'm done talking about Hard to Kill. I'm ready to judge it. How about you, man?
Yeah, hell yeah. Okay, she was French, raised a French-Canadian father.
We
and
come from
Irish,
France.
Irish mother.
French-Canadian, that's where just the weird not being able to say anything right comes from.
Born in New York raised in London.
English people don't like how they talk. French people don't like how they talk.
Yeah.
It's a mess up there in Quebec.
Oh, boy.
Let's listen to some coming attractions, what we're going to be talking about in the next couple weeks. And then, you know, Hard to Kill. After
Judge
7 long years,
Judge
he wakes
Mint
up.
De Geraldo.
In the city of New Orleans, in a darker side of Dixie, away from the music and the lights, there's a new game in town.
You'll be provided with a guide, trackers, and the weapons of your choice.
I need to file a missing person report.
The competitors are deadly.
We pride ourselves in hunting only combat veterans, men who have the necessary skills to make our hunts more interesting.
And they always win.
You want to find your father? Get somebody who knows the city to show you around.
Now, the opposition is about to get one last chance.
What kind of a name is Chance?
My mama took when.
My friend, Mr. Boudreaux. Silver Star, Marine Forced Recon. He's obviously not someone we should underestimate. Is an annoying little insect. And I want him stepped on hard.
We need to get out of here now.
Ladies first.
What?
These men will chase after you. You mad at you for business or pleasure?
Both. Look at it this way. You're gonna get to meet Elvis. Give it a rest, pal.
Jean-Claude Van Damme is the hard target.
You miss me?
From internationally acclaimed action director John Woo.
How's it feel to be hunted?
You tell me.
Hard Target.
Calumet, Colorado, population 8,200. Before the sun sets, foreign soldiers will march victorious through the streets. Eight high school students will take to the mountains, fight for freedom, and become a symbol to unite America.
Not bad for a bunch of kids.
Wolverines!
Red Dawn, rated PG-13. Starts Friday, August 10th. Check newspapers for a selected theater near you.
Lightning, frightening again and again and again.
Thunderstorms rolling in.
Yeah.
This isn't a good omen for Hard to Kill as it enters Judgment Day, Matt. It seems like there's some doom in its future.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. I bet there's plenty of great reviews out there on the World Wide Web.
I'm going to tell you.
For this film.
Normally, I pull up some reviews,
yeah.
And I've got these prepared for you. You don't know what's coming.
I'm no, just
hitting
I don't.
You with these, and then you react to them.
I do.
This week, there's a little bit of a twist to our format.
What the what?
Because I pulled these up at like 5 in the morning this morning after we'd been drinking all night. So whatever I've got here is going to be as big a surprise to me as it is to you this week.
I'm hoping at least...
We can both react to it.
I'm hoping at least one of these doesn't even pertain to the movie Hard to Kill.
That's very possible. We'll dig into it right now and we'll see how this hashes out. It looks like, I've gone with our normal strategy of 2 1-bullet reviews and 2 5-bullet reviews, so...
Well, it's good that you can just put it on autopilot.
Okay, so there's another twist, Matt. Breaking news. This first review is from C. Henry Hammer III, and it is not a 1-bullet review. It's 1.5 bones. He was sure to write in his own review system. 1.5 bones from C. Henry Hammer III.
Off of Amazon or
I did not
IMDb.
Write that down.
Who's to say?
Cut me some slack here.
Who's to say?
I was blind drunk and it was 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
C. Henry Hammer III says, not one of Seagal's best. Hadn't seen it in over 10 years, but remember liking it. His early run, but aside from a dark, bloody opening, the movie hits the skids. With his 7-year coma for so long, it almost doesn't matter when he finally decides to get revenge. All one sentence. Not sure how it's supposed to be structured. Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen. Into our next sentence. It's like there's two different high-concept movies fighting for screen time. The Punisher family slain revenge story and man awakens from 7-year coma and has to run from the mob story. Together, they do not work. It's astounding to me people bought Seagal's bullshit.
Whoa.
Looking at it now, it's so clearly obvious he's a fraud.
Whoa.
A total fucking fraud. Can't believe Lisa Brock fell for that shit.
Ah, poor
One
Lisa
and a half
Brock.
Bones.
I don't know who she is, but
C. Henry Hammer.
Too third. Bad for her.
That's a pretty good one. I'm glad Drunk Me pulled that one up.
Yeah.
His next 1-bullet review is from Amazon user Rocco.
Okay.
Rocco says, DVD not very good movie. I don't like this kind of movie. Boring movie, call me asleep all day and kiss. I don't like it. Supposed to be action-adventure all day. One bullet from Amazon user Roko. I'm sorry to yell, but that was all in caps.
Yeah.
Caps lock was on for Roko.
Huh.
On the other side of the coin, we got some people who think this DVD is a five-bullet perfect movie out there. Some people who watch this and were like, yeah, that's the perfect movie.
You know what? That's it.
First person that thinks that, ooh, this is a little lengthy. I'm going to have to run through this one fast. This is a five-bullet review from IMDb user American Eagle 92. No, sorry. www.AmericanEagle92.
Okay.
Yeah. Steven Seagal is a man who you will hard to kill.
Yep.
Let's remember the legendary, so favorite and loving for many of us age, times of 80s. The times when we could watch such awesome, ideal, great, wonderful movies like this. That was a lot of commas. So many actors sincerely want to come back again in those so close and so far years. And I understand that this is the time for me too. Well, me too. Well, this movie is a bright example of the brutal classic and loving for us motion picture of quote-unquote action genre. Here's very dynamic, interesting, full of colorful moments and cute episodes movie, which proves for everybody that Steven Seagal isn't the greatest master of the martial arts only, but he's very good actor too.
Very
you know,
good
me
actor
and my
too.
Family love this movie, and actually we didn't last our strong feeling to this movie. And rewatched it so many times. Besides, every new watching of Hard to Kill was like a celebrating of something. We hadn't the balloons only, smiling face.
Yep.
Fighting scenes, pursuits, epic episodes of the trainings, everything in this movie was so great and so interesting that I couldn't stop watch it. So I didn't need to do something else when I could watch in the 20th, 30th time this motion picture. For me, the understanding knowing that this movie is in the Stevens list of early filmography very important, and I think here is one of the best movies as in Stevens' movie career as among the numerous action movies. What's about the mark? It's
right?
only 10 out of 10. Trust me, you have to watch this movie named Hard to Kill, and be sure you'll like this as I liked it over 14 years ago. Good luck, and only the best movies in your way, my dear friends. Five bullets from IMDb user www.AmericanEagle92.
www.AmericanEagle92. You're not fooling anybody with that name.
This is one of those
Trump's
Russian
coming
bots
after
I'm hearing about.
You. Yeah.
This is one of these Russian bots I've
Trump's
been hearing so much about.
Sending you back to wherever
American
you came from.
American Eagle, I'm not so sure about that.
American Eagle, you sound like watching Hard to Kill is where you learned English.
This next one's a little bit lengthy too, but I can see why I picked it because this is a five-bullet review from Amazon. Top 1,000 reviewer,
ooh,
S.J. Volk.
We always love those.
Hard to Kill is one of Steven Seagal's best action movies. It was made when he was still a clean-cut action hero who looked eerily like the original comic book's Captain Marvel of Shazam fame.
Okay.
His co-star in this movie is his ex-wife slash model, Kelly LeBrock. She's reason enough to watch this movie. Waking from a seven-year coma, police detective Mason Storm embarks on a mission to avenge his murdered wife. I love it when these Amazon reviews give us a plot synopsis. Like, the plot synopsis is already on the page, man. You don't got to do that part. And
he
tracks down and beats up a corrupt senator, and he single-handedly dismembers the members of an entire department of crooked cops. The pool room scene is a classic. After delivering a jagged pool cue into the throat of his wife's killer, followed by a fatal kick to the head, Seagal delivers the immortal line, "Fuck you and die!" Partly because of that line, I suspect this movie will continue to gain in cult status, and mainly because the movie's satisfaction of revenge works as a powerful sublimation for anyone harboring some unresolved hostility, which probably includes myself and the majority of mankind. Masterfully directed by Bruce Malmuth and brilliantly edited by John Link. Give me a break. The movie's weirdly penetrating soundtrack by David Michael Frank sends eerie chills right up the viewer's spine. Pulling out IMDb and pro reviewing this thing. No wonder he's in the top 1,000. No matter how many times I've watched this thriller, it pulls me into its excitement as if for the first time. This is a must-have action masterpiece for Seagal fans. Five bullets from Amazon top 1,000 reviewer who did his fucking homework, S.J. Volk.
Fuck you and die!
Motherfucker! Some of Seagal's best work, but I don't want to color your judgment any further. Can't. Matt, what are your final thoughts and your bullet rating for Hard to Kill?
Final thought is I can't do this anymore. Oh, that dude, he composed all of Seagal's films.
It's got to be his fucking like pot dealer or something.
Out for Justice, Hard to Kill, and Above the Law.
Every three-word title movie this motherfucker made.
Yeah.
Wait, no Marked for Death? Somebody else did Marked for Death?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look
Not important. That. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, let's get out of here. Boy. Oof. Hard to Kill. Kelly LeBrock made the... excuse me, Lisa LeBrock.
That's right. No, Lisa Brock.
Lisa Brock made the joke. And she's right. More like hard to
she
watch.
She fell for his bullshit. Sounds like you didn't.
It's...
Oh, fuck. I was going to start my final touch with Hard to Kill, more like Hard to Watch.
Yeah.
God damn you. God damn you.
It was a movie. The only thing that, like, stuck with me was just, like, I forgot how much I like watching Steven Seagal act. Like, anytime he's on the scene...
He's a man of intrigue. A real bon vivant.
I don't care how bad or boring the movie is. Uh-huh. Or, like... how the story doesn't make sense. Yeah. If he's talking or doing something, sure. I'm a fucking enthralled, man. Like, everything he does is gold to me. Like, yelling motherfucker. Like, and that's what makes the yelling line so great. Yeah. Like, he has, like, this weird, like, Nick Cage character essence about him.
Yeah.
But, like, it's the Steven Seagal, I don't know, like, he whispers and he's quiet
it's
the whole
weird.
Time. And then he'll, like...
He's doing his weird Seagal
like,
thing.
He'll get loud for something, and it's like, why? Well, why did you choose that part? Mm-hmm. Like,
he's
but,
got like a fucking low key Tommy Wiseau quality.
He
to
really
him,
does.
Where he's just and he's working his weird obsessions into everything he does. He's got his own unique weird delivery.
And you're absolutely right. And I thought that immediately in that liquor store scene. It reminded me of the flower shop scene because
oh,
he like,
hi, Mark.
Yeah, he opens the door. For a lady.
I hate the Oscars. You're my favorite customer. Yeah.
He opens the door for a lady and she's like, oh,
yeah, that's right.
Thank you. And he's like, you're welcome.
Hey, viewers, look at what a good guy I am.
It was so weird. It's a bad
wait,
movie.
Wait. Cut. I want a second take where she remarks on how big my bulge is.
Yeah. Thank you. Nice dick. It's a really bad movie. It's hard to watch, but I love Seagal so much. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna bump it to 2 stars.
Oh wow,
two bullets. Excuse me.
Fuck. I remember liking this one when I was a kid and thinking that it was like in the upper echelon of Seagal movies. And looking back, I was wondering why
more off.
And I think I've nailed it down. Where it's just as a kid, I really liked the idea of going into a coma and coming out of a coma. That's just a cool thing kids like. Like fucking quicksand and petrified wood and coming out of comas.
Yeah.
That's just cool shit if you're a kid.
That's fair.
So that colored it, but no, this is a terrible script, terrible acting, terrible music, not a ton of action. Just Steven Seagal's classic fat guy not having to move fight choreography, and he's not even a fat guy yet. He's just like loose and lanky.
Yeah.
Tease you with tits and don't show you any. This movie can suck a fucking dick. Fuck, I hate to do this. I hate to do this, but this doesn't even know how to be a revenge movie. It's a bad movie, but it's Seagal, so like you, I gotta echo that I also like watching it. I also gotta echo that I give it 2 fucking bullets. I wrote down 2 bullets. I want some disagreement between us. Every fucking week here, we're nailing it exactly the same ratings on these damn things.
We
need
understand.
To get like a third co-host in here who's a moron or something. Somebody who we can really like fucking... go to the mattresses again.
Be like, fuck you talking about, you like that movie.
Yeah. You start flying in a moron.
Yeah, we'll find somebody. Until then, you know, we're just going to keep watching these movies giving you what
get
we
ready for John Woo and JCVD's legendary team up. We're going from Hard to Kill to Hard Target next week.
Sip on to Wall Party on Baby Oil and Blow. Stay single.
It's a long road. When you're on your own, and it hurts when they tear your dreams apart. And every new town just seems to bring you down. mine can break your heart. It's so real, right outside your front door. I tell ya, out where they'll kill ya, you could use a friend. For